Good afternoon. Welcome to this news conference sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. You'll be hearing from two speakers today. Before we introduce them as a group and then individually, I want to invite the operator on the line to explain how the Q&A period will work. Operator?
Yes, sir. During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star, then two. Again, it is star, then one to ask a question.
And we will have the operator back on the line at the start of the Q&A period to repeat those instructions about how members of the news media can pose questions. We want to let you know that if you'd like background info on today's news event, there's been slides prepared at cleanenergy.org. Click on the Bellefonte link under the Hot Topics tab. And as I mentioned before, you will be hearing from two speakers today. The first is Dr. Stephen Smith. He's the Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And the second is John D. Wilson. He's the Director of Research at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And let's begin with our first speaker, Dr. Stephen Smith, Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Dr. Smith?
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for joining this afternoon. Again, my name is Stephen Smith. I'm the Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is a regional nonprofit energy policy and environmental advocacy organization that does work in the Southeast United States. We have a long history of working on issues around the Tennessee Valley Authority, and it is the focus of our talk today. Back in September, and this has actually been going on for a number of months, there's been this active discussion brewing about what to do with the Bellefonte reactor, which is a reactor, a Babcock and Wilcox reactor that is located in northeast Alabama that has a very long and troubled history with TVA. It has never operated as a nuclear reactor. It was started in 1974. It's been on again, off again for quite some time. It's even been completely released by TVA. At least units 1 and 2 were released at one time to allow non-nuclear personnel to go onto the site and scavenge parts. But then TVA decided that they wanted to complete it again, and they've brought it back under the control of the Atomic Energy Act, and they claim that it is still a viable reactor for completion, although there is some very legitimate questions about need. Back in around the 2000-2002 timeframe, a gentleman by the name of Franklin Haney had proposed a privatization scheme for this reactor that TVA rejected. And then we heard that that concept was being recycled again, and this time a former TVA board member by the name of Denny Bodoff, who was former TVA board chair and had been on the TVA board for a while, had picked up the mantle, and we understand is working with Mr. Haney and trying to advance this concept. In September of this year, there was a quickly pulled together and I guess I would call it semi-public because not everyone was made aware of the meeting where some Tennessee senators and House members gathered in Knoxville, and there was a discussion about the future of Bellefonte. There was a discussion about industrial rates, and Mr. Bodoff presented a concept about trying to privatize Bellefonte again, and we had understood that he'd been working on that for a number of months, had been doing a number of things to bring political pressure on TVA leadership around this concept. And it took us a little while to get a copy of the full proposal. And what you're going to hear today is a brief discussion of what we see in the proposal. And we've sort of labeled it the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there is a slide deck that that John Wilson, who's our director of research, will talk about briefly. But basically the reason we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly is that there's a number of things in this proposal that are like candy to different constituencies across the Tennessee Valley. One of the things that we found very intriguing about it was that the Bodoff-Haney proposal was actually challenging and pushing TVA to be more aggressive in their retirement of coal-fired power plants. And given the serious magnitude of climate disruption that we are all facing across the planet and the need to accelerate coal retirements, we actually see that as a positive direction. And it intrigued us about this proposal to see whether the rationale behind it was supportable. And we wanted to look at this proposal, and so there is the concept of retiring more coal plants, which, if it could be done, would be a good thing, because we do believe that TVA needs to continue down that path aggressively and quickly because of the climate impacts of burning coal and fossil fuels. That was the good part. The bad part was, once we got into this, and John is going to go into this in more detail, the privatization scheme was really poorly done. We found it simplistically constructed, containing numerous factual errors, and offers a number of unrealistic promises about rates and schedule. And I'll let John get into that in a second in the detail. And the thing that we found was really ugly was that, there seems to be political pressure and some attempts to people to enrich themselves by wedging themselves into this proposal, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But let me hand it off to John and let him get into the details of the report and his analysis and the work we've done to sort of deconstruct and identify where there are some real concerns about the way this was put together. John?
I'm John Wilson, Research Director for Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And as was mentioned, the full slide deck is available. There's a link in the media advisory, which I believe all of you should have access to. And the link has gone live about an hour ago. And it's under the to participate paragraph within that media advisory. So if you have not had a chance to download that, you may wish to look at some of the details in that. And during Q&A, I'm happy to discuss any points within the full deck. But here for the next 5 minutes or so, I'm just going to scan through some of our high-level takeaways without tracking it as a presentation or anything like that. So as Steve mentioned, the review we did of the proposal, initially seemed really interesting and intriguing, but as we dug into it, we found first that it was simplistically constructed. Secondly, we found a number of factual errors in it. And third, we found that it was just unrealistic in terms of the promises that it made in terms of things like rates and schedules and that sort of thing. So with respect to simplistically constructed, if any of you have had the opportunity to be exposed to utilities, resource planning, and financial models, you know they're very complicated. They deal with a lot of interrelated factors. The price of energy, for example, affects how much energy people use, all kinds of feedback loops and complicating factors. In contrast to that level of complexity, which we've come to appreciate with our engagement with utilities, the Bothorf and Haney nuclear privatization scheme is really just a simplistic cash flow model and doesn't come close to demonstrating that it's a feasible plan for the utility. Now, that said, it still could be a feasible plan. It just isn't proven to be such with a little spreadsheet analysis. So then we looked into the facts and the assumptions that were made in building that approach, and we found a lot of errors. I'll give really just a telling example, and I'm happy to discuss others during Q&A. So first, the basic idea is that by retiring the coal plants, you open up a lot of cash that the utility can invest in more productive ways, and we agree with that logic in general. They said there's $875 million in avoided capital expenditures on coal plants, and that by 2020 you'd see about $694 million a year in annual cost savings for operations and maintenance. In fact, a lot of those savings, however, are from plants that TVA has already committed to or actually idled. $392 million of those capital savings are really just already done and on the books, and $108 million of the annual O&M cost savings that Bothorf and Haney estimate are also already locked in and pretty much decided by TVA. So this sort of cash cow that the proposal is founded on is actually, it's a real cow, but a lot of it's already been spoken for, so to speak. So it really isn't accurate to imply that the retirement of these, or excuse me, that the nuclear privatization scheme can really enable these retirements. The second thing I wanted to point out is that the nuclear privatization scheme is based on unrealistic promises regarding rates. The biggest such promise is this purported 30% cut in industrial rates. Now, we've been told, it's not clear from the proposal, but we've been told that this has been marketed as being applied only to what's called a direct-serve industrial customer, which is one of the large industrial customers that buys power directly from TVA and not from a local distributor such as Knoxville Utility Board or Memphis. Not all industrial customers in the Valley would actually benefit from this cut if that's how it would be proposed. Now, the key thing to understand is that this rate cut isn't possible without the privatized financing scheme. So it basically means that Bottorff and Haney are proposing to borrow money to help cut rates now. And that would mean that on a per kilowatt hour basis, the industrial customers would see their rates cut so low that their contribution to power plant and transmission costs would be less than one-third that of other TVA system customers on a per kilowatt hour basis. So they're basically nearly categorically exempting industrial, these select class of industrial customers from paying for the power plants and paying for the transmission lines, and they're only paying for the fuel to run those power plants. And also, this $1.8 billion benefit that these large industrial customers would get would be repaid by other residential, commercial, and industrial customers on the TVA system. The loan's got to be paid back somehow, and that's who would be paying it primarily. So that's one example of the problems we see with sort of the whole rate argument. Then finally, I wanted to point out that it's based on an unrealistic schedule. There's a lot of schedule issues in the proposal, but just focusing on Bellefonte, the TVA assumption in their current studies is that Bellefonte would have a 2021 in-service date for Unit 1. So they're currently studying it as if that can be done, but they don't even TVA doesn't consider this to be a construction target. It's just a planning number that they're using for because they have to pick a date. They don't have a construction plan, and it's highly doubtful that TVA even believes that a 2021 in-service date is feasible. In contrast to that sort of vague 2021 date, Bottorff and Haney's plan would finish Unit 1 in 3 years earlier, in 2018, and they would finish Unit 2 in 2020. So they're proposing to get two units done much quicker than TVA even sort of thinks it might be able to get one unit done. Another problem with that schedule is that we're told that there's a need for a 500 kV transmission line, which is a very large transition line, in order to build Unit 2. These kind of lines can require about a decade to complete. So even if TVA got rolling on the process for getting that transmission line built, say, early next year, it would be 2024, most likely, before that transmission line would be built. And without that transmission line being built, Unit 2 can't be in service. So the whole concept of getting Unit 2 online in 2020 is really is not tenable. So the bottom line here is that the project schedule is at least 3 to 4 years too ambitious by even TVA's planning standards. And, you know, as we've seen in the past, TVA tends towards rosy scenarios in its nuclear construction schedules. So hopefully that gives you a sense of the problems that we've seen with this proposal. And although we think that there's a lot of value in retiring the coal plants and that there's much better ways that TVA can spend its money within the and build towards the future, that this plan doesn't represent a step forward in that respect. Thank you.
Again, that was Dr. Stephen Smith, the Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and John D. Wilson, Director of Research at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And that takes us to the Q&A portion of the call. Joining us for the Q&A portion of the call will be Sarah Barzak. She's the Program Director for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And now I want to bring the invite the operator back on the line to explain once again how the Q&A period will go. Operator?
Yes sir. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star, then two, to remove yourself from the list. we please ask that you limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star, then one to rejoin the queue.
And moderator, this is Steve. While we're waiting for the queue, I wanted to just say one closing thing in advance of the Q&A. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy strongly resist those who use uninformed political pressure in an attempt to economically benefit subregions of TVA service territory. There's a lot of discussion going on right now about how important it is to bring economic development into Northeast Alabama, and we've seen political pressure from the senators there and others, and then we've seen political pressure brought by even some of the Tennessee delegation around industrial rates, not understanding that this shift of burden would transfer to commercial and residential customers. And we really think that that needs to be resisted, because TVA operates as a regional whole, and no individual region should be advantaged based on uninformed political pressure. The other thing that we're very concerned about that is happening, we believe, with this proposal is that, one, you have a former TVA board member who's trying to personally enrich himself by getting involved with this scheme and making a significant amount of money, likely off of the way that this thing is being proposed. And two, in Mr. Haney, you have someone who is a known strong political donor to a particular party who's using that influence to try to pressure an outcome that may not be maybe good for him financially, but would not be good for the region. And we have heard rumors even that this privatization scheme may have ties back to even the whole concept of getting in the OMB budget, the fact, or the OMB, the president's budget, that we should look at privatizing TVA as a way to put pressure on the Tennessee Valley Authority to sort of move with this type of proposal. So this is uninformed, it is unwarranted, and it leads to bad decision making. The proper way to do this is what TVA has proposed, which is to engage in its resource planning decisions through an open, transparent process that involves a lot of stakeholder input and involvement, and those decisions are methodically worked through, which is what TVA is initiating under the IRP. And we believe that that is where this decision about Bellefonte should be properly addressed and dealt with, and that these type of schemes with political pressure will not lead to good decision-making. Let me end there and look forward to the questions.
All right, before we start the Q&A portion, I just want to emphasize that the Q&A period is for reporters only, and you can find more information about today's news event on the web at www.cleanenergy.org. Again, that's www.cleanenergy.org. And a streaming audio replay of today's news event will also be available as of 5 p.m. Eastern Time today. And after the news event is over, you can contact Jennifer Renix at 865-235-1448 to be connected with any of the speakers that you've heard from today. Okay, operator, let's move to our first question.
Yes, sir. The first question we have comes from Ray Henry with the Associated Press.
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hey, forgive my ignorance because I'm sort of on the front end of this issue here, but if you look at the players who are building nuclear power plants, they tend to be internationally governments who have sort of the balance sheet of a national government behind them, or regulated utilities that basically have, you know, are legally entitled to collect their rate base back, cost, expenses. This private group of investors, do they assume that there's going to be like a large pool of private parties out of there looking to invest in nuclear?
Well, my understanding is the way they're constructing. This is Stephen Smith, that they're constructing this is that basically what they're going to do is they know that the Tennessee Valley Authority has the ability to back up, because they can raise their rates and stuff, back up any sort of an agreement they go into. And what they're going to do is put all the risk onto the ratepayers of the Tennessee Valley. and they're going to then use the debt ceiling, which is TVA has a $30 billion congressionally mandated debt ceiling that they cannot exceed. And so what they're saying is that because TVA is already at about $26 billion, and this proposal would likely exceed $8 billion and potentially go over the debt ceiling, that they would bring some private capital in, that TVA would then carry all the risk and use its institutional power to make sure that these guys that brought the money to the table would get a good rate of return on their investment. And so it's kind of a hybrid of using private capital to get behind a government entity, because TVA is a government entity, and make money off of it.
Got it. All right, thank you.
Okay, operator, let's move on to our next question.
Yes, the question comes from Matt Vandick of SNL Energy.
Hi, thank you. Well, first, you all said that you obtained a copy of the proposal. Just wondering how I can obtain the copy as well. And also, the PowerPoint slide, page 4, talks about, says that the Belafonte cost compares poorly with Watts Bar in a combined cycle. Just wondering if you could break down those numbers, where they come from, just what the significance of that is.
This is John Wilson, and I can take the second question on those numbers. Those come from TVA's own presentation that they gave at the same meeting, and that's publicly available from TVA's website, or we're happy to get that to you. But those are TVA's own cost estimates in terms of how much those units might cost. And as you can see, Belafonte is a much larger cost.
And those are capital costs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to first go to Mr. Bodoff and see if you can get a copy. If you can't get a copy there, we can probably help you obtaining a copy of this proposal. But, this event that they had in September, my understanding is that there were some copies shared with people in the media, so I assume it is public, but it's unclear how public it is and what they're doing. And again, because it was so shoddily done, I can see why they probably don't want a lot of them in circulation, but why don't you check there, and if you have problems, you can come back to us, and we might be able to help you with a copy.
Okay, thank you. Operator, let's move on to our next question.
The next question we have comes from Jeff Beatty with the Energy Daily.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this call. I wondered if you could just walk us through the mechanics of this deal, this proposed deal, as you understand it. I think that Mr. Haney proposed a lease back for Watts Bar Unit 1 Browns Ferry Unit 1 in 2002, when I think he was going to lease it from TVA and then somehow lease it back to them. Is this the same kind of thing?
Yes. John, do you want to talk a little bit about the details, you understand it?
I'll do my best. I will say that is one of the areas where they're a little thin. It's clear it's a leaseback concept. They describe essentially that there would be a point at which TVA would say, we want to close the terms of the agreement, and that has to do with the interest rates that the private entity would obtain in the market. So TVA would say, we think, November of 2017 looks like a really good month to close this deal. We're suggesting that date. But otherwise, basically what the private entity does is it sort of takes title to the land, borrows the money, and then charges TVA to run the plant. But then TVA actually runs the plant. So exactly who carries all the risks in the deal is very unclear, because a lot of these key contract terms aren't spelled out. So if you see on page 5 of the slide deck that we shared, You can see some of the questions here that we have about the key contract terms that you would normally have in this kind of an arrangement. And we really don't understand exactly what risks this private entity would carry in exchange for having the opportunity to earn pretty healthy and effectively guaranteed earnings.
Is it clear who would, at the end of the day, own the output of the plant, who would be selling the output of the plant?
It's clear that they want to sell all of the output to TVA. So it's a single customer,
okay,
single seller deal. It's not a
okay
market arrangement. It's quite possible that in their mind they're thinking if TVA changes its mind and only wants to take 80 or 90%, that they might be able to market some of the power. But that's not what's described here. It's described as a TVA buyer, private company seller, and the private company, all they really are doing is managing the finances. And also there's the question of sort of who takes the construction risk. It seems like they're saying, hey, we'll build this thing for you and we're a private company, so we'll do it really fast. But then it's not clear that if they run into issues with, some kind of licensing issue and the plant is stalled for a couple of years, which has been known to happen, who pays the cost of that risk? Is that going to be covered by TVA customers, or is that going to be, out of the profits? Not clear.
Okay, thank you.
And let me, this is Steve Smith, let me add just a little bit about that risk scenario, just so everybody remembers exactly what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a nuclear reactor that was designed in the 60s, was first initial construction started in 1974. It is a Babcock and Wilcox reactor, which is a unique design. The design that this particular reactor is, because it has a larger core, it has never been licensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the United States. There is not another reactor like this that has ever operated in the United States of this particular design. There is one other reactor of this design that operated for a short period of time in Germany. And so this is a challenging reactor, not only because by the time it went operational, it would be 50 years old since construction started, but it has a unique design that the NRC has not gone through a licensing regime for, and this is using the old licensing regime. And the containment vessel on this reactor is very similar to the Crystal River reactor that was recently shut down by Duke Energy in Florida because it had containment cracks. And there have been issues at this reactor with some of the tensioning cables at the TVA reactor spontaneously rupturing. And so there's already some initial track record before even getting into this about this reactor. So there's a whole host of issues around this. So any aggressive, low-cost scenario that's being proposed for this particular reactor, I think, is highly suspect.
Okay, operator, let's move on to our next question.
Yes, sir. The next one comes from David Flessner of Chattanooga Times Free Press.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Two questions. First, I think the proposal that was made for it would suggest an $11 billion construction-only completion cost for the two units. You said that's an unrealistic assumption. I mean, I think TVA has an $8.1 billion estimate, but that was with construction and capital costs together. I mean, what do you estimate it would cost, if it could, of the completion of the Bellefonte plant? Why can't it be done in 5 years? I mean, it's a unit that at one point they said was 88% done, the first unit, and over 55% done, the second unit. Why would not $11 billion more of a unit that's seemingly half done or at least partially built, why is that an unrealistic assumption in your mind?
Well, isn't the $11 billion for – we understand the $11 billion is actually for completing both units.
That's both units, right. Yep.
Why is
$11 billion impossible for two units there?
Well, we're just highly skeptical, again, because there is, the experience that TVA had in underestimating the cost associated with finishing Watts Bar 2, and Watts Bar 2 in some ways is a more familiar plant because it's a Westinghouse design that is very similar to the Sequoia reactor in some ways. This particular reactor, because it was literally got outside of nuclear control, there's a number of issues that have been identified there that are going to be problematic. There are a number of issues around just the unknown nature of this reactor because it's never received an operating license. And because if people who understand the history of the TVA nuclear program know that from that time period from roughly 1974 until roughly 1985-86 time frame when NRC came in and shut down all of TVA's nuclear reactors, there was a significant construction history there where TVA was not following the proper nuclear protocols on what they were doing at a number of reactors, and that's why Unit 1 at Watts Bar was certified to be ready to go online in 1985, but it took it 11 years after the NRC came in and started to investigate. That period from roughly early 1970s until the mid-80s, NRC viewed TVA as a sister federal agency that did not have to be regulated at the same level, and it wasn't until the mid-1980s that they came in and started doing the scrutiny, and they saw the laxness of how TVA was doing. So most of that construction history that TVA or the people are saying was completed was done in a period of which TVA was not following the proper protocol. So much of what's had to happen is that TVA nuclear has had to go back and recreate that history and in many ways redo a lot of the work. So we're highly skeptical that they could actually meet these targets, and we're looking forward to the IRP where TVA comes in and brings numbers in for Browns Ferry and talks about what they have done to take the lessons learned from Watts Bar 2 and the other lessons learned from Bellefonte, I mean, about whether they can actually complete it. I'm very, very skeptical that the numbers will work, and I think Bodoff's numbers are I think, particularly rosy.
And this is John Wilson. Just very briefly, TVA's estimate that they presented at that same meeting was $8.1 billion construction costs by 2021 for Unit 1 only. And Bodoff and Haney's number is $11 billion for both units by 2020. So it's a, you know, it's a lower cost for two units than TVA would certainly suggest, and it's building them both faster. And of course, I've mentioned already the issue with the transmission upgrades and that sort of thing. So it's, maybe they've got a better line on these cost estimates than TVA, but that seems unlikely given all the questions that we have just about what does this even mean.
One other question, Steve, you had mentioned about the political pressure. Can you give some more color to that? What are you saying that this group is doing? Are they trying to unduly influence the administration or members of Congress in an improper way somehow?
Well, we know for a fact that Senator Sessions has repeatedly, in public statements, in pressure that is showing up, you know, tours that he's done, communications he's had, talked about the need for this plant, the fact that it needs to happen, you know, and been very insistent on wanting to see this happen in northeast Alabama. We've also known that, you know, Lamar Alexander has made completely unrealistic projections about what nuclear power can do, saying that 100 reactors could be completed in 10 years and these other kind of things. The senators were brought into this meeting. Now, their comments were mainly focused on the rate impacts associated with this plan or the need to basically get industrial rates down. They didn't talk about the cross-subsidization. But there has been a lot of political pressure, and I think I would defer to TVA's folks to talk at whatever level they want to talk, but it is our understanding there's been a lot of political pressure brought in. Now, Mr. Haney, who seems to be a little bit more of a murky character operating behind the lines and has a history, if you study his history, of really skating very close to the line of interacting with federal. He's, you know, he's been formally, you know, charged, but I think he's been cleared on, you know, making illegal campaign contributions, this, that, and the other. Our understanding is that he's actually running around bragging that, you know, he was responsible for getting the line in the OMB, president's budget about privatizing TVA as a way to get TVA's attention about what they need to do. Now, I haven't heard him say that. I've never actually, in my recollection, met Mr. Haney. But, you know, he appears through conversations we've had to be somebody who likes to throw his weight around and talk about, you know, all his political connections and all his money and this kind of other stuff. And he potentially, if he's a partner in this, stands to make a lot more money, and he tends to seem to be, his whole MO is to make money off federal deals, and so this is seems to be very attractive to him. But the bottom line is that, you know, and I think it's inappropriate for a former board member, you know, shortly after they've left the board, to come in and try to leverage themselves into a big money-making scheme. So, you know, obviously Mr. Bodoff was fairly politically connected with Lamar Alexander to get appointed to the board. You know, he's using those relationships now to leverage himself in to this kind of a deal, and I think that is all inappropriate. You know, when somebody serves on the TBA board, it is a public service. It is not, you know, a way that you basically expand your Rolodex to where you can come in the future and try to cut deals to make yourself a lot of money. That's really not what I think they envision by having the board, and I think that there should be a ban on letting former board members get in and try to sort of drive deals and use their political leverage and influence to try to influence the outcome, particularly one that is as, you know, questionable and looks to be poorly constructed as this. This seems to me to be plainly an attempt to enrich Mr. Bodoff and Haney at the expense of the ratepayers of the Tennessee Valley.
Thank you. Operator, let's move on to our next question.
Yes, sir. The question comes from Paul Gaddis of AL.com.
Yes, thanks, guys. Dr. Smith, I just kind of wanted to continue out of that political pressure, and you alluded to the economic development in Northeast Alabama that bring Bellefonte Line would have, and also you just spoke about Senator Sessions and some of his comments. Just two parts. One, I mean, how much of the economic development, how much is that a factor in this whole scenario in Northeast Alabama? And then two, as far as the comments that have been made by Senator Sessions, I mean, how is that perceived as being political pressure more than just sort of catering to the audience of touting economic development whenever you visit the location that you're in?
Right, right. Well, let me deal with those. Those are good questions. First of all, TVA has an economic development mission, and that is clearly articulated in the TVA Act. But that economic development mission is not, you know, one region of TVA at the expense of all other parts of TVA. And so while I think we all should be sensitive to the fact that Northern Alabama is obviously a part of TVA and there is a legitimate attempt to try to find what can work as far as economic development in Northern Alabama, but it needs not to be at the expense of the rest of the Tennessee Valley. So what we need to do is look for the proper balance between sustainable, legitimate economic development in Northern Alabama that then benefits the overall economic perspective for the other six states that are part of the Tennessee Valley. And there is likely a possible scenario here in the future where TVA may be looking at a gas plant development for that part of their grid. If they look at further retirements at the Widows Creek plant, that units 7 and 8 are potentially on the block to be looked at. There's already been some movement to talk about retiring the Colbert plant. They've got the Browns Ferry nuclear reactor that has already got three nuclear reactors that are already operating in northern Alabama. And so, you know, the fact that there may be an opportunity for a gas plant somewhere in that area is, I think, a very real possibility and I think would bring economic development. TVA is also making some pretty significant transmission upgrades in that area, and I know there's a significant amount of work that's going on with that. So I'm not quite sure that, you know, that anybody wrote that somehow or another there's a requirement that there be a certain amount of generating capacity in northern Alabama, particularly when you look at some of the other states where there's none. And so Alabama receives the benefits of what's going on in northern Alabama, and I think that's appropriate when it benefits the whole region. Now, as far as Mr. Sessions is concerned, you know, again, obviously any politician can can promote their state. But where I think it begins to cross the line is where they take a federal entity like TVA and they basically try to influence that federal entity to make investment decisions for their particular area that have negative consequences for the rest of the federal entity and TVA. And TVA, again, is a very broad enterprise touching seven states. So it makes no sense to me that any one senator, now maybe that's the way the game's played, but that doesn't mean it's correct or it's the ethical thing to do, and it certainly doesn't lead to good public policy where you have a senator advocating for a particular project if it doesn't make economic sense, if it isn't needed on the TVA system, and if it's likely to lead to further complications that draw the whole region down, because this plant would be extremely expensive and I think highly skeptical about whether it would get online on time and whether it would even operate correctly if it was gotten online. So the question is, why would Senator Session be advocating for a particular solution that basically I think is a high-risk solution, very likely to be more expensive for the Valley and would likely not perform as advertised? Now, that may be great for jobs because, you know, at some level, but there's probably other ways that TVA can make investments for less money that actually give more jobs in northern Alabama than pursuing this failed project.
And just one quick follow-up.
Sure.
What is y'all's sense of how serious TVA is taking this proposal?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I think TVA as a federal entity gets pulled on all the time when, you know, what is disconcerting, again, is that when this was rolled out publicly, there were two senators from Tennessee and a House member, Jimmy Duncan, my understanding, that attended the session in Knoxville. We know that Sessions and Shelby, both the senators from Alabama, have been very aggressive in wanting to see the Bellefonte project completed. And we know that one of the individuals that is behind this is a former TVA chairman, and we know that the other individual is a very well-known donor to both political parties, but particularly to the Democratic Party. So it seems to be a bipartisan effort. And, you know, that I think anyone needs to take somewhat seriously. When we got into this report and we saw how poorly constructed it was, how their factual errors were in it, and the fact that they, you know, really did a very, I think, the best job, sophomoric attempt to piece it all together, I think we were less concerned, because I think that the folks at TVA, and they'll have to speak for themselves, probably have analyzed this also and seen a lot of the same errors that we're seeing. I don't know. My understanding is that this will likely come up at the next board meeting in Oxford, Mississippi in a few weeks. I know that there have been board members that attended the briefing. I know that I personally saw Mr. Bodoff come to Nashville at an ACEEE meeting and meet with Marilyn Brown shortly after she was brought onto the board. So these guys are clearly lobbying this thing pretty aggressively. And when you've got that kind of political horsepower and you've got a reactor that never seems to die, I mean, people kind of tongue-in-cheek call it a zombie reactor because it just doesn't ever go away, I think you just got to take something like this serious. And so what we wanted to do was put it out in the scrutiny of sunshine and the public, let people really understand and see what's being proposed here and the implications of it. And we think that we welcome Bellefonte being considered in the Integrated Resource Plan. That's the proper venue for this discussion. We look forward to it, you know, attempting to make the case given the economic realities that TVA is under. And, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but they're not entitled to their facts. And this is a pretty clear example of where the facts just don't, we think, add up to make a good case for finishing this plant.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. Operator, do we have any additional questions at this time?
No, sir. I'm showing no further questions at this time.
Okay. We know some reporters will want to take their questions offline, and we want to make sure that you know where to get more information about today's news conference. You can contact Jennifer Renix at 865-235-1448 to be connected with any of the speakers you've heard from today. Again, that's Jennifer Renix at 865-235-1448. And as I said before, you can find information related to today's news event on the web at www.cleanenergy.org under the Press Room tab. Again, that's www.cleanenergy.org under the Press Room tab. And that's where you'll be able to find a streaming audio replay of the news event today, and that will be made available as of 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And again, you've been listening to a news conference sponsored by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Thank you for joining us, and that concludes today's news event.